Welcome to Prevent Connect Audio.
Welcome to a Prevent Connect Audio conference recording. The following was recorded on May 21st at a Call to Men's 2009 Annual National Conference in New York City, New York. To learn more about A Call to Men, visit their website at www.acalltomen.org.
That being said, there are many women who joined me in that effort. And our next speaker is Rita Smith. Rita is the executive director of the National Coalition Against Domestic Violence, which has a long history of grassroots organizing on behalf of women who are abused by their intimate partners, and a long history of direct advocacy with the policymakers across this country. So it is with great pleasure that I welcome and provide for you Rita Smith.
I feel a huge responsibility at times leading this organization because, you know, in 1978 when it was formed by local domestic violence programs and a very few state coalitions who existed at the time to really get themselves organized nationally and to provide an ongoing, consistent voice at the national level to get awareness, to get visibility, to work on policy, which at that time didn't exist. And so it feels like a huge mantle sometimes to carry that, because the work of so many people who can never be named in entirety is what really drove the national organizing. And I think that it's really important that that we honor where it came from. It came from, first off, survivors of domestic violence. From women of color, from lesbians, who really got together and said, we have got to stop this somehow. And so I think it's important that we continue to look for ways that we can do this work better. And this is certainly one of them. It took us a while to get to this point as a national movement of women's work. Because I think that for the first decade or so, we were just trying to focus on providing services. We just needed to get the hotlines going. We needed to get the shelters there. We needed to protect women for a minute while we thought about this, while we thought about what does this mean? I mean, we were all, I think, you know, the more that women sat and talked together and the scope of the problem became so clear, and the number of women and children and men who were dying was so overwhelming that it was kind of like, we just got to get beds, got to get places for people to go. And we put our focus there for a long time. And we have built a fairly impressive set of services and resources now in this country. Really good work being done. And we are expanding that work into communities that have traditionally not been included. And that work is also important, and we need to recognize the work that's being done, particularly in communities of color, around how do you stop this kind of violence. Because stopping that violence in the home will make our community safer. And we understand that on some level. It's a little harder to get the policymakers to understand that connection. If you want a safe community, you need safe homes. But they're getting there. They're getting there. And so I think that that somewhere along the way, we really started to engage with some people who had been doing this work for a while. There were some people who kind of got that connection early on in the work in the 80s, easily. Kathleen Carlin, for instance, in Georgia, and Phyllis up in upstate New York, and other people who were looking at, you know, there's another faction of this work that has to be done. And so they focused their energy there, working on men, trying to find ways to really solve the problem from the perspective of where the perpetration predominantly comes from. And so the rest of us kind of did work around victims and the needs that were showing up. But I really want to respect the leadership of the people who thought that this has to be done sort of in a bilateral process, that there are two entities involved in this, and that we have to deal with both. We have to find a solution with both. And so we're here now. after a lot of work being done separately. There hasn't been a lot of work done sort of together around engaging men. And, you know, back in 1998, Tiffany Carr, who is at the Florida Coalition, and I had a meeting with Lynn Burnham, who was with the NFL at the time, to ask them about taking this issue on. Well, in 1998, they weren't as excited about that idea, unfortunately. But it seems that professional sports leagues are starting to shift that thinking. And I think it has come from just the last decade of people talking to them about, you really want to take this on. You want to take it on because it will make your corporation a better corporation. It will make the people who work for you better performers. And really, isn't that what it's all about? And so I want to thank those of you in the room who have had conversations with your particular sports entities, whether it's been at the college level or the professional level in your areas, because it is starting to shift that energy some. And those are the kind of role models we want standing up, talking to men. We don't really want the Dallas Cowboy cheerleaders, although they're wonderful women. We're trying to change men's perspective about working on this issue. We don't just want to get them in the room and excite them in unhelpful ways. So the energy around trying to get men involved is trying to find the right role models, trying to find the role models that men will listen to. And to the general public of men, I'm not it. Sue Else at the National Network isn't it. That's, Cheryl Cates at the National Hotline. That's not who men are going to naturally say, you're right on, sister girl. All right, I'm with you. It's going to take men talking to men, men engaging men, men challenging men. And I think that that's really important that we find ways to create the avenues, because I get a lot of interest from reporters and people who want me to talk about this issue. And what we're trying to work at the national level at this point is trying to find ways to also invite men into that conversation, have men be part of the conversation that the reporters are talking to, getting the stories about, so that the perspective of men starts to come through the articles and it becomes less and less defined as women talking about women's issues, and that it becomes more about people talking about ending violence in our communities. So I think that that's a critical piece of the pie, and I think that many of the men's groups, and a call to men in particular, has really tried to find ways to put that perspective in place. And I think the conversations that we'll be having the rest of the 2 days that we're here is really, how do we move that forward? How do we gather the energy that's sort of existing all over the country in small pods and pull it into one funnel so that it becomes louder, it becomes more visible, it becomes more apparent that this isn't just about a few crackpots out there, but that this is really something that is going to help all of us in our relationships. It'll actually help men live longer. I think you all know that if you see the research, the use of violence tends to create more heart problems and those kinds of things and long-term physical issues with men and with the victims who are experiencing it. So, it's a healthcare issue. It's just an issue of utilizing resources in a better way. You know, people will stop stalking their victims on company time. there's a whole lot of just ripple effects that can come from us reducing the use of intimate partner violence as a way to solve problems, as a way to gain control. So in the prospect of the work that we're doing, there are some obstacles in the way, obviously, in terms of doing this work. Because there is, the work that they have done to put the people together to really make this 2 days come together. Everybody that is going to present to you has something really important to say. And I want to make sure that people have the time that they're supposed to have so that you can engage with them and you can hear with what they're saying. And then we could take that back into the far reaches of our country and really make a difference from here on. Because I think this is we're really at a point. I do agree, be with you and to change. This is we're in an interesting time where I think that we have made significant progress in many ways as a culture, and we're also at a place where we are in enormous challenges that we've brought on ourselves. But that we're in this weird place where we've had some significant changes within this kind of work, but we're at a place where there's no money. That we have managed the money so badly in terms of how we relate to each other that trying to keep going, keep those services happening until things settle down again. For many programs, particularly sexual assault and domestic violence programs, just surviving is a challenge right now. So how do you do, cultural change work when you can't answer the crisis line? So we're in this kind of weird, kind of interesting place where I'm hoping that we all find a way to keep moving together and not fall back, because we don't want to have to make up some of the work we've already done. We want to keep moving forward. So how do we do that? I think that, in many respects, the obstacles that we face in terms of taking this on are very similar to the obstacles that we take when we try to end racism or homophobia. There are cultural beliefs that are wrong. There are cultural ways of interacting that are just wrong, and we have to shift that. It's a power shift. So as a white woman, I have a lot to learn about how I support racism in the ways that I think, in the ways that I work. And I think for men, that's true, that they are going to have to challenge themselves around what their beliefs are, what their privilege is, and how they need to change how they interact with the world so that the power shift can happen and relationships can be more equal. It's not an easy process. And I'm happy to know that for the men who have been doing this work for a while, they are interested and committed to having women as leaders. And I appreciate that recognition. I also think that men need to take some initiative, that men have some responsibility to figure out what to do with our leadership and guidance. And I'm more than happy to be one of the people that gives feedback and to help guide. But I also know that I don't have time to organize the guys. I'm working really hard. And so men do have some responsibility for initiative. How do we do that? How do we do that in a way that feels like it's not taking us, taking over the issue, that's not usurping our power and authority as women? I think we're in a place where we have to have some really interesting, difficult conversations about that. What does that look like? How is it that we really build significant, substantial alliances that move forward from here, that involve men in more prominent, more visible, more vocal places? Because I think it's important that we do that. But how do we do that? And I think that's some of the conversation that we have to have with each other and continue to have, because I don't think it's an easy conversation, and I also don't think it's one that's going to have easy answers. But I do think it's critical that we have the conversation at this point, because there are some incredibly great men doing this work, have been doing it for a long time. I would like to have them stop talking to each other and to start talking to everybody else that's out there. I just passed huge numbers of men, and I wondered what their thoughts would be if they were sitting in this room. Men who had never had the conversation before, men who'd never been challenged before about the way that they interact with each other and with women. And I think that we need to get to those men. While I see way more men than I usually see at these conferences, thank you. we have to get stadiums full of men thinking about this. How do we do that? I'm not sure. But we need to have that conversation. How do we get a larger mass of human beings together, particularly men, to start having these conversations? And so I want to think about that. with Tony and Ted and Dick and you know, Paul Kivel and, you know, numbers and numbers of men. I want to think about that. How do we do this? Because I think we're at that place where we have to. We're at a place where we need to think about the masses, educating the masses. Who are the role models that they'll pay attention to? What are the venues? Where do we go to engage men in a way that is substantial? You know, and it's not a one-time thing. So how do we get them to do it long-term? Because, you know, just coming to a one-day event and then expecting them to change their behavior the rest of the time isn't gonna be a successful process. So how do we long-term get the change to happen? What are the tools? Is there a way for the internet to be part of that? I don't know. There's got to be something that we can do moving forward from here where we're not just talking to each other anymore. We're talking to people who, this is new information to them. This is a new way of thinking. And you all know in your communities what avenues are available to you. So we need to start talking together about what's working. If you're getting some traction in your community, we need to know what that looks like so that we might be able to replicate it somewhere else. I think that it's really important that we find creative ways for long-term engagement, because that's what it, we're talking about, changing a cultural belief system, a paradigm shift. It's a long-term, how do we do that? Not just kind of once a year they come to the fundraiser and they write a check, or, you know, they come on the Make a Difference Day and they fix up the shelter, you know, landscaping. And we want men to be engaged that way, but we need them to be engaged a lot more every day in how women are viewed, how we interact with each other, what they call each other when they want to diss each other. You know, instead of saying, you know, something about how they throw like a girl, it's like, you know, the language has to change. So those are day-to-day environments where that has to happen on a regular basis with a lot more people than the great guys that I know many of. And I don't know a lot of the men who are in this room, so that was exciting for me, that I didn't know a lot of the men who had walked through the door. And that tells me something about the number of rings of influence that are starting to happen. And so thank you for, you know, increasing the number of people in the room. But how do we get bigger? How do we get bigger? And I know that we're somewhat ahead of time. And I am feeling like part of the process of this conference is going to be people networking, people talking together, people sharing ideas with each other on a deeper level. And that will be less likely if I'm still talking to you for another 10 minutes. And I'm thinking that it might be really helpful if you all started having conversations with each other during break times. And it's, I've been doing this work a really long time. B, I don't want to tell you what my club songs were because they go way beyond RuPaul. So, since 1981, we've seen some significant changes since I began this work. And I didn't begin this work thinking I was going to do it as a career. I took a job as a counselor, you know, in 1981, a weekend crisis counselor, and I had no idea that this was going to be my life's work, because at the time, it wasn't something you could do as life's work. I mean, nobody knew what it was. But I feel very fortunate that I've been able to do it, that I know the kinds of people who are in this room, that I know the kind of work that you've done, and I know the danger that you've put yourself in to do it, because it is dangerous work. We're fortunate that we don't have more people hurt and injured who do this work. But you do phenomenal work ending violence in your community. You do amazing work. You don't get much support for that. You don't get very good pay for that. And you don't get a lot of accolades for it. But what you're doing is incredible work, and it's changing. It certainly changed my life. But the thing about this work is that it will change your life. It will very often change your friends. It will sometimes change who your family members are who talk to you. And the one thing that I do know, as women and men working as allies, if we work together, we can change the world. Thank you.
Thank you for joining Prevent Connect Audio. Prevent Connect Audio is a project of the California Coalition Against Sexual Assault, with funding from the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. The views presented on Prevent Connect Audio are not necessarily the views of the United States government, the CDC, or CalCASA. You can contact us at info@preventconnect.org, or you can learn much more on our website at www.preventconnect.org.